This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Many industries have come to a grinding halt as a consequence of the coronavirus, and even those that are still open are facing changes to business as usual. For the media, this is true as well. In a time when getting reliable information to the public is critical, many newsrooms across the country are also finding themselves with limited resources. Joining us today is Ryan Martin, an investigative reporter from the Indianapolis Star, to talk about what this pandemic has meant for the paper. Ryan, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So let's start with the impact the coronavirus has had on daily coverage at the Indianapolis Star. New information develops every single day. So do new questions. What does this mean for a newsroom? How do you cover a pandemic?
Oh, wow. That's a really good and very big question, because everything has changed so quickly, and it still changes, if not every day, I mean, every hour. So on a basic level, I mean, we haven't been going to the office for a few weeks. We are following the CDC's guidelines and working remotely for as best we can. But there's still a number of journalists, myself included, who are still, we're classified as essential work under the governor's executive orders. And we are still going and reporting in person as much as possible, while still trying to observe all of the, best practices to stay safe and to keep other people safe. But that's just, there's a whole lot of stuff we're trying to do to protect ourselves and to protect the people that we're writing about and that we're coming into contact with. But at the same time, the whole newsroom has shifted to really just focus on this really big issue. I mean, this is the news story of our lifetime. And we're trying to do everything we can to give people the information they need to know, or, people who want to stay safe, want to keep their families safe, who are trying to make sense of what's happening, who are trying to understand these big decisions that public officials are making, trying to understand, how they'll handle big decisions that schools are making for their children. There's just a lot.
I mean, obviously, this affects all of us. And so it's not hard to find different angles to look at things through, and lenses to look at things through, I suppose. Are you, though, finding yourself, or your colleagues finding yourself, fatigued at trying to think of all of those angles to approach the coverage?
Yes. I would say there's no question that we're all fatigued. I think the one thing I would point out, though, is there are a lot of people who that we're interviewing and talking to who are going through some of the toughest times of their lives. And so any sort of, I know for me and many of the people I talk to in the Star newsroom, that helps put things into perspective. I mean, many of us signed up to live up to this exact moment. We're just trying to do what we've always thought our jobs were to do, which is to help people in times of crisis like this.
And we've seen that the response to the pandemic has really varied from state to state in the course of the last few weeks, and even more locally in some cases. What are the advantages of having local and statewide reporters here?
There's a few advantages to having local reporters. For the beginning, for example, the governor's was holding his daily press conferences in person, and we had reporters who had relationships with people over at the State House or attending those press conferences, and that enabled us to get information that was up to date, accurate, out to people hour by hour. The governor, of course, has since made those press conferences remote and has enabled people to call in from all across the state, which is great, by the way. I think that's really wonderful. But beyond that, we also have the perspective of just covering the city and covering the state for a long time. So some of the challenges that are popping up, we know how to tackle those questions. But what's great about the situation the Indianapolis Star is in, anyway, is we're a part of this larger company that has reporters in states across the country. And we're also a part of, we have a relationship with USA Today. So whereas some newsrooms might also be stretching their resources to try and cover national issues, we can kind of rely on our other newsroom partners to tackle some of those national questions while we really stay focused on Indiana and Indianapolis.
What about the response from readership? What's that looked like?
So by all accounts, every piece of like every metric that we can look at when it comes to stories, people are reading the Star now more than ever, which I can understand why. It's just people, like I said earlier, people are trying to stay safe, trying to keep their families safe. And so every story that is about the coronavirus, people are really interested in reading it. They want to know how it's affecting them. And I think for a lot of people, they're just trying to make sense of a lot of the chaos that's happening around them.
I am a subscriber to the Star, and I mostly use the digital app, and I'm seeing a lot more push notifications, which I appreciate, but which the Star I've found has been a little conservative with at times in the past, meaning they don't want to bug people. They don't want to send a push notification to every subscriber's phone anytime any little thing happens. But a lot of big things are happening these days. Is that, to your knowledge, it may not be your department, but is that an intentional decision these days?
You're correct in that it's not my department, so I'm not in on those decisions. But I have talked to our editors, and I know from their perspective, and mine as well, we are trying our best to get people accurate information and help them, like I said earlier, understand how to make sense of what's happening without falling into scare tactics or trying to scare them or unnecessarily scare them, I guess. You know, we're not trying to sensationalize any part of this news in any way for, you know, reasons I'm sure you and all of your listeners will understand. We're trying to be smart about this. And so that has also informed our coverage of other things in the past. That informs how we have covered crime, which is something I've done a lot in my career. So that's why you might not see push alerts all the time about crime, because we try to keep crime stories in perspective, right? It's no different during the coronavirus pandemic. The push alerts you're getting are going to be the ones that we think at least you need to read.
We're talking to investigative reporter Ryan Martin from the Indianapolis Star about how the Star is handling this crisis coverage. We know that few industries have been left untouched by the pandemic, and the number of layoffs and furloughs are growing by the day. Gannett, the company that owns the Indianapolis Star and a lot of other papers across the country, recently announced how they're going to handle furloughs. What's that going to look like?
So what Gannett has decided to do, that's the company that owns us, they are asking all newsroom employees across the country, for the most part, to take 3 weeks of furloughs over the next 3 months. So one in April, one in May, one in June. So for the Indianapolis Star newsroom, that means there will be, you know, that's a fourth of our, reporting resources will be gone in any given moment.
Does Gannett say why these cuts are necessary?
They are saying that because of the, you know, I think you'd probably have to ask them for clarity on that. You might imagine that, I would disagree with their decision making on this. I think we are dealing with a crisis of our lifetime, and reporting now is more important now than it's ever been. And I disagree with their decision. I'm also an officer for the Indianapolis Newspaper Guild, which represents all of the frontline journalists who are reporting on this. And it's our position that they shouldn't be doing it.
I can understand, though, why it's happening. News is a business, these are tough decisions that are having to be made by everybody. Had other cost-cutting options been explored by Gannett, to your knowledge?
They've done a few cost-cutting measures. To their credit, I know one of our CEOs is not taking any pay this quarter, for example. And I know that some of the executives have taken a temporary pay cut while the furloughs are in effect, which I think are I mean it. I think that that's both smart, and I appreciate that they're doing that. That being said, there's a lot of other cost-cutting measures they could take that I would advocate for. For example, over the past couple years, we know that Gannett and the company Gannett merged with, Gatehouse, they paid out something, I believe it was $329 million in dividends to shareholders. From my perspective, that's an example of taking money away from communities, and rather than investing it in the newsrooms or in the newspaper or in the product, and they're handing it out to the wealthiest shareholders. There's other examples like that that I could cite that I just think create. If you really want to live up to the stated mission of serving our community, it's important to be there during the biggest news event of our time.
So if a reporter can't work for a week, we're talking about taking a week out of every month for each reporter, then are there other concerns here outside of having to sacrifice some stories? Reporters are often sharing information on their Twitter accounts or taking tips from the public, so it's got to be tough to unplug, so to speak, right?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, we're still grappling with how that'll be handled, because there are some pretty clear guidelines in federal labor law on how to handle that kind of thing. You know, in some industries, it's as simple as, hey, don't log into your work computer. Don't check your work email. For journalists, of course, we're getting contacted on our cell phones, on our Facebook, on our Twitter. I mean, so it's a little bit different. What I can say, though, no matter, you know, I want to be clear about this, no matter what ends up happening with furloughs, I know that the Star newsroom and our local editors and our local journalists are going to do everything that we can to make sure that the most important objective, truthful journalism still makes it to people. I have concerns about the long-term effects of a decision like this. But just because a reporter is on furlough doesn't mean another reporter will not step up and try to make sure that the community stays informed.
We're talking to Ryan Martin, an investigative journalist at the Indianapolis Star, about crisis coverage locally here in Indianapolis and, of course, statewide, and context for the rest of the country and what we're all dealing with. We will be back with Ryan in just 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking about crisis coverage today in the media in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. We're on the phone with Ryan Martin, an investigative journalist at the Indianapolis Star. And Ryan, we've been talking about the furloughs that the company that you work for, Gannett, has had to put forth in order to stay afloat during this pandemic. And what kind of an impact do you anticipate that these furloughs are going to have on coverage, perhaps the most important variable that it affects?
It's tough for me to say exactly what kind of impact that'll have, except one thing is clear. We will have one-fourth less reporting resources at any given moment because of the nature of the furloughs that Gannett is implementing, not just in Indianapolis, but at all of its newsrooms across the country. So I worry a little bit less for the week of the month that I'm on furlough myself. I worry a lot more, though, for the week that our photojournalists aren't able to be out documenting what's happening right now in this extremely unique, important moment in time, or the week that our health reporter, Sherry Rudofsky, isn't around. There's just a lot of expertise in the Indianapolis Star newsroom that, as someone who lives in Indianapolis, who calls this community my home, I really rely on their expertise. But you know, as I just to, you know, we'll make sure that the news gets covered. People will step up. They'll, as they have for years and years, to make sure that information still gets out there, that people still know what they get, what they need to know. But, it'll just be challenging. And, I think Gannett probably knows that. I know for a fact that the local editors know that. But, you know, we'll get the job done.
How, though, does this change the responsibilities of individual reporters or production staff? I mean, I guess from what I'm hearing, there's going to be somewhat less content, although there's so much to cover. So maybe there will seem to be just as much content. Are people going to have to work harder to make up for that?
In my mind, yes, people will have to work harder. We'll have to do more with less, which is something we've gotten accustomed to over the years. But to be honest with you, we're not the only industry who's had to grapple with that. And I imagine many of your listeners have found themselves in similar situations. One thing that's really interesting about this time, though, is many of our traditional beats, many of the things that we had been covering, so much of regular life is on pause right now because of the global pandemic. All of us are reporting on coronavirus in different ways. So when we talk about covering each other, help, you know, what areas might go uncovered, I think the larger concern I have is just the loss of expertise in a given area for a week. And, you know, because of the labor laws, there's no communication that can occur with a reporter who's on furlough for a week or a photojournalist who's on furlough for a week. So we'll do the best we can to be prepared and handle that as best we can. You know, and I'm speaking of course as just one reporter, but as an officer of the Indianapolis Newspaper Guild, nothing I'm saying should be taken as representing the opinion of the Indianapolis Star. That being said, I consider our local editors to be good friends of mine, and I know that they're working to minimize the impact on this kind of thing too. They're trying to make sure that we continue to live up to our mission as best we can, even if our company is making some unfortunate decisions right now.
So has there been any talk about what happens if a reporter gets sick?
There has been some talk on that. So as part of the decision to furlough employees, the Guild is actually in conversations with Gannett on how to handle this decision. And one of the things that the Guild has been asking for is a guarantee from the company that if a reporter or a photographer gets sick, that they will be given additional sick days, both for their safety and for the safety of their families and our community. We are still in talks with the company on that. So we're not sure exactly how that'll play out. Another thing we've asked the company to consider is giving frontline journalists appropriate protective equipment, such as face masks or gloves. When I've been out interviewing people for a story I'm working on right now, they felt safer when I had that. And in fact, I did not have any of that equipment. They gave me some. That's just a couple small examples of ways that we think Gannett could step up to help journalists in this time of crisis.
The Indy Star is unionized. What does that mean for this particular situation?
It basically just means that we, many of the frontline journalists, so I'm talking about the reporters, the photographers, the producers, we are protected by a contract that was negotiated with the company. And whenever the company does something that's outside of that contract, we have the opportunity to negotiate with them. So in this example, we're negotiating the impact of the furloughs. And for us, you know, there's no question that there's a financial impact that's going to hit every single journalist's pocketbook. But let's put that in perspective a little bit. We're seeing tens of thousands of people filing for unemployment right now. In my reporting this week, I spent time with people who were delivering care packages and hot meals to senior citizens and their families who couldn't afford food. So when I talk about this issue of furlough, I just want to be clear. I'm not trying to get into the finances here. The larger issue for me is the loss of that reporting expertise, the loss of people who are covering this crisis, people who are ensuring that our family stays safe. And when I look at the decisions that Gannett is making, I know that they're trying to weather this financial crisis as much as any other public company is, but there are just a lot of other decisions they could be making that doesn't sacrifice the journalism, which is needed now more than ever.
Do you anticipate that the Star will go back to normal routine and capacity after the worst of this has passed?
I don't know what normal is going to look like. I don't know. When you say normal routine, do you mean will there be an end to the furloughs and whatnot, or do you mean we'll all be back in the office, or do you mean?
I would say yeah. Is everyone coming back? That's kind of where I'm getting what I'm getting at. Is everyone coming back? Yeah. Is it back to normal what it was before?
I think we're going to have to figure out what the new normal is, and one of the challenges I think is we don't know when all this is going to actually end. A lot of the modeling that's out there on the pandemic is pretty alarming, and of course the financial repercussions of that for ordinary people is also alarming. This is all happening, of course, at a time, you know, it was just a few months ago that our parent company, Gannett, merged with Gatehouse, another newspaper company, to create the largest newspaper company in the country. And they have been talking again and again, the executives, about cutting $300 million from the expenses. We don't know exactly what that's looking like. We do know that some of that is going to result in layoffs. We have two CEOs. One of those CEOs has said in the past that there would be very minimal cuts to journalists, but we're already seeing journalists get laid off. So I take that statement with a grain of salt. And I'm looking around and seeing myself and my colleagues facing the prospect of furloughs over the next 3 months. I'm at the point where I'm hoping that's the worst of it, but we'll have to wait and see.
Ryan Martin is an investigative journalist at the Indianapolis Star. Thanks so much for your reporting, and thanks for your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me, and stay safe.
Joining us now is the editor of another publication covering the pandemic closely. Oshia Boyd is the editor of the Indianapolis Recorder, a local weekly newspaper in Indianapolis and one of the oldest African-American publications in the country. Oshia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So the Indianapolis Recorder is a local paper with a lot of history. For those of us who might be unfamiliar, can you introduce us to the paper?
Yes, the Recorder is 125 years old this year, so 125. We have been Black-owned since the beginning, started out as a two-page church bulletin in 1895 and morphed into a weekly. That's what we've been. I think that happened in 1899. I don't have my notes in front of me with all the dates. I'm not a good numbers person.
That's okay. You're busy these days.
I'm a good word person, but not a numbers person. But so, yes, we became a weekly, and that's what we've been doing since, I think, 1899. So, and we serve primarily the African-American community in Indianapolis.
So how has this pandemic changed the way the Recorder is approaching coverage?
Oh, wow.
Big question.
It's changing it not so much as how we are approaching things, but just in how quickly things are happening. It has definitely been a challenge for us to just keep up with so much. I think that's been a challenge for just anyone in general. But being that we're a news organization, we want to make sure that we are disseminating accurate information and making sure that we keep up with what's going on so that we can make sure our readers and those who read online know what's happening.
Weekly,
it's a little bit easier for us to update online than it is to in the paper.
Are you getting questions or concerns from the audience?
Some, yes. Definitely some questions, some concerns. People definitely want to know what's going on. People are really, I think the whole stimulus check thing, in addition to testing, the stimulus check is really a big concern. Like, what's going on with that? When are we getting that? And then people who've lost their jobs or who kind of are concerned about unemployment.
So
those are probably the big three concerns.
Has there been an increase in readership during the past few weeks?
Definitely online. I was just, funny you asked that. I was just looking at our Google Analytics this morning. And one of our stories, we had a story on a woman who actually had COVID-19, is in recovery now. So she gave her first person story about her experience. And our readership for that was like 6,000, almost 7,000 page views.
Wow. How big is your staff?
We have a newsroom of three.
Three people.
Myself and two writers.
So when your staff is that small, it's got to be nerve-wracking to think of someone getting sick. How has that changed how your team reports?
Well, it is nerve-wracking, but I have my office, so I'm in my office for the most part, and the reporters just come to my door.
Gotcha.
They don't actually come inside anymore. And then when we have our meetings now, we've just been using our phones, our cell phones, to do conference calls. So we've changed that. And then because the newsroom is just one open space, so they share the newsroom. So what we're doing kind of is alternating working from home for one, and then the other one comes in, just because everyone else pretty much has their own office here except for the newsroom. So trying to make sure we keep everyone healthy. And then the building is closed to the public. You can't come in without an appointment. So we're just trying to make sure that we mitigate any kind of illness for any of our staff. We do have a small staff, and so we want to make sure that we keep everyone healthy. And if we lost one reporter, that's 50% gone.
Yeah.
So that's a huge amount, you know, a huge number if we lose one person. So.
And we talked with a reporter from the Star earlier, the Indianapolis Star, about furloughs happening in their newsroom. Lots of papers are feeling the ripple effects of businesses closing, as many of those businesses, they don't have any funds to buy the advertising that supports the local media. Has your paper, The Recorder, been affected by this?
I'm going to knock on wood and say no furloughs. I know our president, COO Robert Shigog, does not want to go that route. He's really doing all he can to make sure we don't. He's been pretty fiscally responsible. But since I'm not on that end, I don't see the money. But I do know that we've lost advertisers. I do know that. Pacers, when the NBA canceled, there went our Pacers ads. You know, Indy 11, those kind of ads, I know for sure we no longer have. And that definitely plays a role in what we can do. But as we're already small, in some ways it definitely hurts us when we're small. But because we're already small, we already know how to kind of work within our budget, with well below our means.
The Recorder's been around for over 100 years, and you've covered historical event after historical event. And now we're in the midst of another one. I mean, it's times like these. What can local papers offer to their audience that maybe other publications can't?
I think you hit it right on the when you said local. We offer local. We bring it right down to where you're at. It's one thing to watch national news, but it's another thing to read a story on someone in her own words about what happened to her, about how she felt when she contracted this virus and not knowing where she got it from. It's another thing when you can read or go on our Facebook site and you can see a video of community members feeding the hungry, feeding people, making sure people have produce and dairy. You know, those are things local media can do. And not just, my goal is to never feed into the hype of trying to scare people. But we want to make sure that you have accurate information and you know where your resources are. You know where to turn if you need help. And I think that's where local media definitely plays a role. And for The Recorder, we definitely are very community oriented. And a lot of our readers feel as if they've grown up with us. Their grandparents had us. Their parents read us. You know, they saw it in their grandparents' homes growing up. So definitely feel a connection. So we definitely feel as if we're community. And so my job as a good neighbor is to make sure that I give my neighbor good information and help my neighbor. So I see our coverage as making sure I'm giving you the information you need to help you in this trying time. And it is historical. We've never been anything like this before.
The Recorder organized a panel of community leaders a few weeks ago for a virtual town hall to talk about the impact of the coronavirus on the African-American community. What were some of the big concerns?
Well, that's when it was still very, very new. So people were just, the concerns were just what is going on. Just a lot of uneasiness, uncertainty. And I don't know that we have moved beyond that, but we are not in that same kind of panic we once were. There's still uncertainty. And we definitely we just had another town hall, virtual town hall, Saturday. talking about mental health and trying to make sure that you watch your mental health in this time of stay-at-home orders and, you know, people losing their jobs and kind of concerned about their financial stability. We've also partnered with New America to do some town halls with them too. So we had one last Tuesday, have another one coming up tomorrow, and then we have another town hall on black-owned businesses, trying to help black-owned businesses find the resources they need, small businesses, because we know that many times black-owned businesses are small and they are the hardest hit. So these are things we're going to keep doing. We're going to have more town halls, virtual town halls, that is, to try to make sure we disseminate information and help answer questions as they in real time.
Oshea Boyd, editor of the Indianapolis Recorder, thank you so much for joining us today, and best of luck.
Well, thank you so much, and best of luck to you. Stay safe.
Up next, we'll close out the show with a conversation I had with a professor of journalism about the big picture implications the pandemic has had on coverage throughout the crisis and what it could mean for the media in years to come. I'm Matt Pelser, back with that in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on how local media has been affected by the coronavirus pandemic and what that means for getting information to the public in a moment when communities most need it. We're joined now by Jerry Linowska, an associate professor at Indiana University's Media School. Jerry, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
So a lot of us are following the news a lot more closely than ever before to keep up to date on the pandemic, but despite increased attention to the media, the industry is not immune to these economic pressures. What do those economic challenges look like for newsrooms?
Well, the what I've seen described as the silver lining for news media and all of this is that people do seem to be occupying their isolation hours with media of all kinds, of course, and news media is a beneficiary of that. So people certainly are paying a lot of attention. One of the problems is that they may not be paying extra dollars for the attention that they're giving to media, and that is really the main problem, and it really comes on top of, you know, a couple decades worth of bad news for news media economy. And so, you know, with the bottom sort of dropping out of advertising as the economy grinds to a halt, it's putting extra stress on newsrooms of all sizes and varieties. And so that's essentially what the problem is. We're seeing furloughs, layoffs, a few media outlets that are closing. We're seeing some news organizations like the Terre Haute Tribune Star is reducing print publication, going down to 5 days from 7 days. They're not publishing on Tuesday and Sunday anymore after, I think, maybe it's the end of the month. So that's essentially the problem. One thing that I think is really important to emphasize here that distinguishes this from previous problems that news media has experienced or have experienced is that this is economy-wide. So you know, the double gut punch that news media took in, you know, the first decade of the 21st century really related to the transition to digital content with really the internet coming into full force, you know, combined with the real estate market dropping out in 2008. And so that was a kind of a twin punch to the gut that really hit the advertising revenue that most news media rely on. And so that was, you know, part of it was economy-wide, but part of it was very media-specific. The current situation is really touching all industries. And so, you know, I think it's important to kind of sort that out and to remember that everyone is suffering, some more than others, but certainly just about every business is taking a hit. And so once we emerge from the other side of this, then we'll be able to see better at that point, what the long-term effect is on all businesses, including news media.
I mean, when newsrooms have to lay off staff, though, what are the implications for the public? We don't know what we don't get. You know, can we expect this to impact the access of information to information that we have?
Yeah, there are a couple dimensions there. One is that, you know, it's a time when people are paying, you know, a special attention, maybe extra attention to news media, and it's a time when they need that information more than ever. And it's a time of crisis when it's really important for the organization of mass communication to disseminate information about important things that are happening on the policy level, important things that officials are doing to try to respond to a time of crisis. And yet they're challenged by the, the ability for news organizations to do that is challenged by the necessity to tighten their belts and to deal with the advertising crisis that is also happening. So that's why we're seeing these layoffs and so forth. And it does make it very challenging in terms of coverage of what's happening. We have depleted staff, depleted resources. There are other issues like physical restrictions. Social distancing applies to everybody, but it certainly affects the way that reporters can relate to members of the public and to public officials, to business people whom they might be covering, and makes it more difficult to gather information in the ways that journalists are used to. A couple other things that are really problematic right now, and we're starting to see some interesting tracking of these issues, government making limitations on access to public records and meetings based on the physical restrictions that are required in a time of pandemic. And then we've got this whole competing sort of underground news economy of misinformation that makes it doubly challenging. So not only do we have to have journalists covering the facts, they have to be aware for the universe of alternate facts and misinformation that's being peddled by a lot of people. So it's really a complex tangle of factors that is difficult to deal with when you've got the added worry of, reduced staffing.
What tools, though, if any, do we have to mitigate the spread of misinformation?
Well, that's a great question. There are a lot of there's a lot of brain power working on that very question right now. And, one of the dimensions that is, involved there is the technological aspect where social scientists are trying to figure out ways, computer scientists and social scientists are trying to figure out ways to combat misinformation at the technological level, that is to use algorithms and bots to sort of identify misinformation as it hits. One of the problems there is that, as soon as you devise a solution for that, sometimes the trolls and folks who are devising misinformation find ways around your solutions. And so, the other big area that really involves a solution for this is media literacy, and that involves people who are not just in journalism, but people, all of us. Taking extra care to look at the sources, to look at the evidence that lay behind the content that we're reading. And, I think the news media in particular plays a really important role here in trying to educate the public on what constitutes information that's good and what constitutes misinformation. And a lot of that is about transparency of sourcing and evidence and making clear to people, how it is that a journalist knows what a journalist knows. And so we're seeing a lot of interesting efforts that news organizations have to, to link to their sources and so forth, and to explain why they're doing a particular story and on what it's based.
We're talking to Jerry Linowska, an associate professor at Indiana University's Media School. Jerry, you've got expertise in the history of journalism. How does the coronavirus compare when we look at how other major crises have been covered by the press? What are the factors that make this different?
Well, one interesting thing about the news business is that it's and I think this is true for businesses generally, that they react to technological change, and there are always innovations that change a business. Because news is organized around the idea of examining change in society, the word news really relates to innovation, new information. Journalists tend to, because of that, be really interested and open about changes in their own industry. And so there's a phrase that scholars use to describe this meta-journalistic discourse. That's journalism about journalism. And I've been sort of paying attention to that ever since I started in journalism myself 30 plus years ago, and I kept a manila folder called the angst-ridden industry file, and there were always articles that would appear in the trade press about the latest thing that was going to kill the business, and that the business was, you know, in a death spiral, sort of these narratives of decline. And then as I got into teaching and researching about journalism, I realized, well, that really goes back quite a long way. So this idea that the news business is has a questionable future, or that it's in a death spiral, has been with us a long time. You do have to look at the current situation and acknowledge that this is different from many of those instances, and in that there really are some existential challenges, not for the industry as a whole, I think, but certainly for maybe certain sectors of the industry. But it's certainly been there for a long time, and news has tended to emerge from these various crises, such as the onset of new technology, television, for instance, radio, the internet, were all these supposed existential threats to newspapers, for instance. Newspapers emerged on the other side of those things with their business intact, but perhaps slimmer. And I think that's what we'll see here. But we may see, you know, given the fact that this is economy-wide and the economy will come back at some point, it'll be a little bit of a different kind of recovery than it has been in the past, I think.
I mean, we're hearing about newsrooms shrinking in the middle of this pandemic, but we know that local newsrooms have already seen major downsizing in the last several years. How much have local newsrooms changed in the past decade or so? How did they look then versus how they look now?
Yeah, I don't have figures right in front of me, but the numbers were pretty dire before. That's certainly true. 20 years ago, we were probably looking at a national advertising revenue stream of $20 billion, and it's certainly well under $4 or $5 billion at this point, maybe even under $1 billion. And with this sort of hit, it's obviously dropping. I've seen some pretty spectacular estimates of the decrease that will be blamed on the pandemic, you know, as much as 50% from where it was, which was already low. And that has translated to declining newsroom employment. We've seen newsroom employment from a high in the 40 to 50,000 range, I think, across the U.S. to under 20,000. So we'll see that decline certainly temporarily. You know, I think some of the predictions that I'm hearing are maybe a little bit overheated. You've seen some words like apocalyptic and annihilation and catastrophic and so forth. I mean, certainly going to be a real major problem. And but I think we won't really know for a number of months what the ultimate result will be. And the thing that we have to really guard against is corporate news owners, for instance, using this as an opportunity to just take those resources away and never put them back. But there are some things that are that may help ameliorate this. Certainly the stimulus package. There are news organizations that are going to apply for assistance with that stimulus package. And so, you know, we'll just have to kind of monitor it and see how it all ends up on the other side.
Well, there's also the shift from reliance on local or even regional media to national media among consumers in the past several years as well. Can you talk about what's behind that shift?
Yeah, I think that, you know, because of the way national politics has captured our attention over the past couple elections in particular, that a lot of attention has sort of gravitated that direction. But I think that there's still a lot of interest in local events and local news. I think the problem is that there's not enough of an understanding that local news organizations are suffering. And I really think that that's where a lot of the issue is, and a lot of the concern really is right now, that local news organizations in particular will take the hit. I think some of the national news organizations, the networks and the big newspapers, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, are going to suffer somewhat, but they have some ability to move with their revenue and with the capital that they've built up, and the attention, the extra attention that they're getting in something like this. But there were some really interesting numbers about local news that I just read from Pew organization, where 71% of adults indicated that they thought local news was doing pretty well financially. Only 14% of those adults are actually paying for local news. So that leaves organizations like the Star locally, other local papers, online news organizations that are local and focused, really struggling. And that's a problem because, you know, the local level is where people tend to feel issues most acutely, even if the national scene is what draws their attention.
What do you do we have any examples of outlets or publications that have been able to build a sustainable business model during this time?
Well, I think it's too early to say specifically about the, you know, the last couple of months with this coronavirus situation. But certainly we've seen interesting growth and innovation in the online and nonprofit sectors of news media. So there are something like 200 plus online newsrooms that have sprung up in the past decade, and a trade association devoted specifically to nonprofit news organizations. And many of them are focused on local news in their communities, and a lot of them also are focused on doing really serious investigative reporting and accountability reporting that is perhaps the most important kind of journalism that we need, especially in times like these. And they tend to get their revenue not from advertising, but primarily from foundations or from donors. And then, you know, many of them also rely on subscriptions. So they tend to be a little bit more durable in a crisis like this than advertising dependent media. But they're still feeling a little bit. I mean, there are problems with foundations who are rediverting their funds to coronavirus causes, and foundations themselves, incidentally, are going to feel the pinch here as their portfolios in the stock market, shrink their endowments. So those nonprofits and the public news organizations are not immune, but they may be a little better off than the commercial enterprises right now.
And we've got just about a minute left, but Jerry, what a time to be a professor of journalism. Your students aren't going to be in the traditional classroom for the rest of the year, and meanwhile, we're all watching the importance of journalism in real time. What's this been like for you and your students?
Yeah, the stress that everyone else is feeling, plus, students having the added stress. I teach a lot of seniors who are interested in going out and getting jobs now, so they have that additional factor. And then they're going into a business that is really turbulent and was turbulent even before this happened. So it's challenging and interesting. And what we were telling students before this all happened was, you know, you're going into a very competitive business, and your best but a really important one that can be very rewarding for people who are interested in doing this sort of work. They need to stay in there, hang competitive, and be committed to doing this work because it's really important for our society.
Jerry Linowska, associate professor at Indiana University's Media School. It was great to talk with you. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you, Matt.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow, we're going to take a break from the coronavirus. It's spring, and for many of us, there's not much to do but stare at our bird feeders. We're going to welcome three Indiana bird experts on how to identify many of the birds that make their way here and how to attract them. In the meantime, Twitter and Facebook. Find us at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.